nobody but myself. Nobody but myself. And welcome to another episode of Nights at the Round Table. This is your boy Manuel. I got my queen Angela over here. And to the table, we have Dr. Motley. Say hello.
Yay.
Hello, everyone. Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thanks really for, appreciative. Thanks for taking time. We are totally enthralled. And those of you who are going to hear what Dr. Motley does, it's for a lot of you, it's going to be new. But if you give it a chance, I promise you it will fascinate you like it has fascinated us, because we have both been seen by Dr. Motley. And the first time we were in L.A., right?
Mm-hmm. In L.A.
And he told me what he did, and I was like, what the? You're going to use sound to, like, dissect my body? And it was really interesting. But I'm a musician, so I should know that sound vibrates. But it just didn't click until he started talking. Mm. So for a brief moment, or not even brief, because I don't think it is brief, tell us exactly what it is that you do, what it's called, and break it down so that people know.
Well, I do have a degree in chiropractic, but we focus here at the office in traditional Chinese medicine and functional medicine, and using diagnosis procedures that use sound or vibrational therapy. In a nutshell, in the body with acupuncture or Chinese medicine, the pathways in your body that communicate between cells is run through electricity and light. So you have electricity running through your bones, through your muscles, through your ligaments, through every part of your body, and they communicate from cell to cell. Now, the current, the electricity that flows through your body, I always compare it to the wires that are running in your walls to the outlet. As electricity passes through your body, the speed of the electrons creates sound. Mm. It creates waves around your body. Now, in acupuncture, we call them the meridians, the pathways of energy. And as they pass through a certain pathway, they give off this field, which is called an electromagnetic field. Now, how I come into the system is when a person has an injury in an area, what occurs is that the passage of electricity is stalled. So around that area, electricity is not flowing through your bones or through your muscles or through your ligaments. And what happens? It causes static movement of blood. Mm. So you get this pooling of blood around the area. And so people, you'll press on an area and you'll go, that hurts. This is a cool thing. As electricity passes through you and I, there is voltage that comes off the skin. That electromagnetic wave changes the texture of your skin. So the health of a person emanates from them because of the passage of electricity. If there's a blockage, it shrinks the field around that point. Mm. So when it shrinks, you have a pooling of blood, and then I come along and find the point, and I press in on the point, and your voltage passes on to me. I actually become a grounding rod for you. I ground you out. So in essence, you are the mainframe. I'm a RAM memory. You pass information to me, and I do my best to open up the flow of electricity and blood flow. Why? Because it stimulates the passage of that electricity to the organs, to the muscles, to the ligaments, and you heal on your own. I am the person that only is an adjunct. I don't do anything to, quote, fix you. You fix yourself. So in vibrational therapy, what is happening is as that current is passing from you to you and me, you can determine the frequency of that voltage, of that current that passes into me. There are certain test points I use on my hand when I'm addressing someone. Mm-hmm. And you can find a frequency range of the condition at that blockage point. So if you do any type of research on bacteria, virology, or anything that has to do with microinfections, certain infections vibrate at a certain rate.
Wow.
And they give off certain tones. And you can use vibrational therapy to identify the frequency if it exists in the body. So you can find if there's a bacterial frequency in the body or a viral. But it goes even further. It goes into the aspect, is there emotional vibrations? Is there an aspect of the mind-body connection? Is there something emotionally that keeps somebody from passing that electricity through their body?
That's, and it's all measurable.
It's all measurable. Because if you measure the frequency, the sound that the pineal and pituitary glands in the brain give off, they say for a healthy individual, that's the gland or the parts of the brain that is in communication with God. Mm. The healthier the pineal gland is, the this is how it happens. When a thought comes to our mind, if we're connected to divine,
right,
if we have certain body, somebody say something to us, that frequency, the sound of their voice or that thought comes in our head and literally goes into the pineal gland. The pineal gland receives the information and sees how much stress is involved within that frequency. You then turn the thought into chemistry. That becomes neurotransmitters. Mm. And your brain then sends the neurotransmitters to stimulate the hormonal system. So thoughts become biochemistry, become physical action. And that's what occurs when you get into any stress, like virus, getting sick. You're around somebody that doesn't give you the right vibe. Mm-hmm. That's how frequency vibrational therapy occurs a lot in this office. Because you know when you walk into a situation, you go, that person does not give me a good vibe. Why? Because the voltage that comes off their body, the electromagnetic field, may be very small, which shows how sick they are. Mm. So the
emotionally or physically.
It does not matter what type of stress. So if their cells are toxic, they'll vibrate at a slower rate. Or if they're manic, they'll vibrate at a higher rate. So their field could be either very big or very small. But you walk in and you're at a balance and you're like, I feel good. This is my frequency range. And all of a sudden somebody comes in and they are attracted to you because wow. they're at a low rate and you're at a high rate. And they go, I need to meet you in the middle. And they want you to pull them up. Mm. And so what do? They change the little tone off your body. They're like, you're like, I had to spend a lot of energy being around you because you took
Wow.
my... Interesting.
That's interesting because that brings us to our episode that we did about like toxic people and, yeah. and something that I had mentioned was, are there certain people in your life that every time you hang out with them, you got to like gear up and be like, oh, I'm going to be so exhausted at the end of this lunch, but so there's like a scientific explanation to that person draining you.
Well, we use the terminology all the time, like, oh, this dude got a bad vibe, or they got a good vibe,
right?
Or if it gets real new agey, is like your aura or your whatever. But all that stuff is really explaining scientific things that have been proven to be measurable. Very like much. I always listen to Joe Dispenza, and
I love Joe Dispenza.
I'm sure. So you know the whole idea of that you can measure the energy off of somebody. I'm like, man. So this whole time we're using this terminology of like, vibes, or this dude, like, you know, it just feels weird being around him, or they give off this thing. Mm-hmm. We don't know what to call it, but it's all quantum physics, right? It's all the idea of.
And they have found that like whenever somebody comes around you and they drain you, that they found that the cell surfaces, right? Like the surface of your cells act like a drum, the top of a drum. When a frequency or vibration taps on the drum, they call it the living matrix. And even Dispenza will talk about it. And there's other research that shows that the cells are all connected with these small little tendrils, literally wires that go within the nucleus, down to the outer shell, through they call it the extracellular matrix, like outside the cell to every other cell. So what occurs is that when the vibration hits the top of your cell, it vibrates the drum. And so those tendrils then communicate with light and electricity. They pass the signal along through all the little wires that connect every cell. So that's how you receive. You become almost like a tuning fork when somebody comes into you and you feel it. And it transfers to the whole body. And when you say, I don't feel good, your body will presuppose what their vibe will do to you in the long run. You know what frequency range it pulls you into. So if it lowers you down, it slows your cells down, and you'll start to release chemicals, they say, in response, like toxic chemicals. So then they're toxic to you. You create a memory with them. Shoot. So the memory of them is like, I can't be with them because... You know, we talk about time travel. It truly is this. If you were going to go into a meeting with somebody and like, oh my goodness, they make me feel bad. Your body doesn't know the difference. You already presuppose what it's going to feel like to be around that person. So you're there now.
Wow.
So that's why you have to create new experiences and new relationships to work around those memories. So you have to stop seeing those people, in my opinion.
Right, or replace, or somehow replace the memory with a new emotion.
Yes.
So like rechanging perspective. So if I've had a negative experience with you,
that's what I'm trying to say. Like marriage. Like how do you? You can't stop.
So here's the way like to do it. So it's hard for me to hold certain things against you emotionally, which is why I'm able to get over or not hold anything against you. Like, you know how I was talking about in our therapy sessions, there's sometimes where you'll bring up something and you'll be like, and you feel it right now, but it happened 3 years ago and it hasn't happened since.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So I don't do that because I basically address the emotion as it's happening. And when it's done, I choose in my mind to view it as, this is just better communication. You know how you get mad at me when I say arguments to me are just communications. I don't feel like they're arguments, because arguments come with a negative. But listen, because this will set you free. Like arguments come.
This will set you free.
But for real, look, arguments come with a negative connotation. So when you use the word arguing, instantly in your mind, it is connected to negativity, because when you argue, you see it as negative. When you say debate, you see it as negative. When I say debate or argument, I know within a relationship concept, that's how we get to know each other. That's how we get closer.
Yeah.
So they are not viewed as negative situations. Mm. They're viewed as, this is us building a bridge. This is us working with each other, grinding each other to becoming a better unit. So when we have those things, I don't leave them thinking, damn, another argument. I leave them thinking, damn, she doesn't see that this is going to bring us closer. That makes me sad.
Mm.
Not the argument, the fact that she doesn't see that this argument, if we push through, if we allow ourselves to have those difficult conversations, they can become positive.
Yeah. Okay, what is a practical tool, exercise, something that I could apply using like this example that we're talking about, like arguing in a relationship, in a marriage, and how you're talking about the memory that's connected, the whatever, blah, 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 blah. What is a practical tool for someone like me, anybody who's listening, who can identify with the person in the relationship who does hold the grudge, or who is in counseling talking about, he always does this and he hasn't done it for 3 years. What's something we can do?
The most practical way, without having to get too many pieces so it becomes complicated, it's cliche to say, but when we tag the emotion with a memory, like you say, with this is not an argument, this is something that builds us, it is training your vision, how to envision. They say that in psychology that you can have a pattern become a belief if you think of something 800 to 1,000 times. So if you've been programmed in the past to think a certain way in your relationship, you go, this is a program that's rerunning in my neurology.
Mm.
So they tell us, they advise, even researchers say that there's a thing called the reticular activating system. Hope I'm not getting too nerdy. It's an RAS. But when you are going to a therapist or counseling, they're going to tell you that you want to create a vision, because over the years, you create a nervous system network in your brain to perceive an argument as detrimental. So then anytime an argument or even a conversation, you can look for the detriment or the negative right. aspect of any conversation. So when you have when you train vision, they say that as you see and perceive like what your day or your conversations with him will be like, practice that every day first. Because if you can repeat that 800 to 1,000 times within the span of a few weeks or a few months, you actually regrow new nerves. Not regrow, but grow new nerves and create a new reticular activating system on its own.
So visualize a productive
conversation.
Document.
Well, that and how you describe it. So whenever I tell you, when you describe something and I always say, babe, but tell the truth, like tell it what it is. Because she'll say stuff from an emotional place and I'll be like, or she'll play around and always say, you don't love me or you don't whatever. And I'm like, those are jokes. But when you say things enough times, you start conditioning yourself to believe that certain actions come with those words. So when you're setting yourself up, before we even have the conversation, you're already seeing, oh, he's getting in his way. He's in a, you know, do it whatever. That's you programming yourself. Not even that this conversation is needed, necessary, or could help us. You're thinking, oh, it's going to be another one. So instantly, your whole body turns into the negative space.
But it is another one, though. Usually.
But it's kind of like self-fulfilling prophecy. The reason it keeps coming up, a lot of things keep coming up, is because you never push through.
I'm manifesting your argumentative.
No.
No, but it's like if you do like create You guys have your daily rituals.
Listen, you didn't know you're about to do a marriage counseling, Dr. Motley. You have a new branch of your business now.
I love this. Like, let's go back before, yeah. between. I do think that when you talk about self-fulfilling prophecies, we all do it, that when you train yourself to envision, to visualize, that you just say like a mantra, repeat to yourself a thought where a conversation eventually leads to a positive outcome, or that you create a mantra, they say it, and it's true, because the more you say something out loud, the more chemical change you create.
Wow.
That chemical change will make you choose a certain path physically in your body to create a good situation.
Right.
So you're right. The more mantras, the more visualization. And when they talked about the reticular activating system, they say as you grow it out and you see as not an argument, you can repeat that to yourself. This is positive for us. Iron sharpens iron.
Right.
You actually tune yourself into, you turn the volume up for that specific frequency. So now you're going to look into your anything you do in life. It's not just about an argument with him or a talk with him. It's like any situation now. It's like iron sharpens iron. Everything is for my good. That's how you train visualization.
Good. That's practical.
That is. It's the simplest thing that people, because I can tell you like which acupuncture points to press and stuff, but literally every day you can do morning, midday, night, and just spend 5 minutes and just what's my relationship with him going to be like? What's my next show going to be like?
I think it's just so important. It's so important to talk about these emotions because, and correct me if I'm wrong, wouldn't you say that most stress is coming from either financial, but then secondly would be like relational, and that stress like affects your body, like it weighs on you in different ways that you do end up being a little unhealthy because of the stress or because of that emotional like that you put on yourself that maybe isn't necessary if those situations were viewed as positive, like growing experiences.
Yes. Like the whole concept in neurology about perception, your brain will take any stress. Let's say Angela goes out, sprains her ankle, or she had a childhood trauma, or she had an allergy. The brain perceives all that as just stress. Mm. It doesn't matter what type it is. Then remember we talked about the pineal pituitary. The more stress she receives, and she's turning up, there's a thermostat in her brain goes, I can't handle this much stress. This is where the kicker comes in. You have all this stress coming into your body, and then we have an emotional trauma come into her life. So she says, I'm handling all this stress, and then I have this big emotional upset. So your body starts to choose, how do I adapt? Like I either take this memory or this trauma and I can stuff it because I don't have the capacity in my brain to handle the stress that's coming in every day. So as you stuff, it's like putting stuff into a closet. Mm-hmm. And you're pushing those away, any of those stressors now. So let's say at the beginning you guys had something that happened in your childhood. I'm like, okay, well, it's filled into my body. I stuffed it away. I'm getting daily allergies. I get daily like physical traumas. As it builds, you had that original concept or theme of that emotional trauma that's back in the closet. And it's been draining your energy all day. Now, you could have an allergy come up. You could have a physical trauma, but you perceive it as really bad when the original concept was that trauma. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. It's like you deadened your body to the whole idea of that original trauma, like from a childhood. It's in the closet. It's like I adapted. It doesn't hurt me. Now, that's when people come and they see you and go, man, I'm allergic to everything I eat. Like I can't eat this. I can't breathe this kind of air. I can't handle this type of activity. And the reason being is because they had an old app that's been running in the background of their phone.
Wow.
That makes it, they had an old memory of trauma that ran in the background, and a whole time your battery is updating the old app. So the old app is sitting there updating the whole time. You forget about it, and then you start to download new apps like allergies or physical trauma, and you go, crap, I don't have enough energy to handle the new apps. So they get amplified in your body. Mm. So it makes you physically sick, chemically sick, and emotionally sick overall. So you have to delete the old apps. You have to find out where the closets are at, open them up. And then when you free it up, it actually restores battery power to your body so you can handle all the apps that are running presently.
That's interesting because with Joel and Mariah, we were talking about, decision fatigue?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like how some people will fatigue quicker, but it's usually because of stressors.
Yeah.
Stressors that are...
The simplest thing of what filter should I pick to post this, making that little tiny decision is like, ugh, I can't. Just somebody pick this filter for me. What, going on a date night, where do you want to go? I can't even decide. You just tell me where we're going and I'll get there. Like, that's what we were talking about, decision fatigue. Like, when it's just that little thing, but it probably has nothing to do really with making that decision. It's just your whole body is, like you said, too many apps running in the background.
You're just too tired. So if you had too many apps running in the background, you're so tired, all you had to do was delete the old ones. You have more capacity to handle any day stress. So when you had to choose a restaurant to go to, you'd like, yeah, I have the bandwidth and the capacity now because I have more energy. Mm. I also think that's a great analogy. Like she said, filters. Isn't it amazing on Instagram or anything, you put a filter on your phone? That's perception. You can have one picture that's really cool and put a different filter and you perceive it a whole different way. That's how stress enters the body. Mm. You perceive it as good or bad according to the filter.
Wow. Well, you better add that to your next video, Dr. Motley.
But it's funny because this is why you always make fun of me.
Why?
Because you always make fun of me to friends when you're like, oh, he don't ever see it as arguing. He sees it as talking. And they make fun of it. But I'm like, that's also the reason why you can look at me and be like, how do you like not get mad at people or not like hold grudges with people? Because you've also said that before. Like there's a lot of people that have hurt me in the past that because of how I see things, I don't hold on to it. I don't hold on to unforgiveness because a long time ago I knew what is the straightest point to accomplish the things that I want. And it's not unforgiveness, it's not holding on to bitterness, and it's not closing communication. It's going through the tough stuff, talking about the stuff that makes me uncomfortable, and dealing with the emotions that make me feel hurt or make me feel pain. So I dive head into unforgiveness or head into a conversation that we have to have because I know, and this is why I always tell you, it's gonna come back around. You can't push things down. You can't push them away. You have to have those conversations, whether they make you feel uncomfortable or not, and understand that on the other side of this conversation is going to be greater unity, more intimacy, more this, as opposed to seeing it as something that's like, oh, I'm going to like ignore it or I'm going to bail out and hopefully the person will never bring it up again. So what you're trying to condition in them is now they have to stuff it down and now they end up with an app that's running all the time, that's going to drain them. And it's going to eventually blow up in your face. Which is why I say all the time, I'm like, if we don't have this conversation, it's not going to go away. And who knows how that person's going to react if the old app is still running in the background. They may explode. It may end up in a very negative, toxic situation. And the whole time, you're going to be wondering, what happened? Why'd you do that? And the dude's going to be like, how many times did I try to make this work? Like, how many times did I bring this up that we wanted to make this right? And nobody, you didn't want to have that tough conversation. But now you're going to end up having a worse conversation. You know what I'm saying? The background analogy is so good because people are used to phones. And whenever you have an old app that's not updated or when it's running in the background, it always drains your battery quicker. And Apple technician always has to be like, what's running in your background? Or when you're in the laptop, my wife is infamous for this, she has a lot of tabs open.
Yeah.
And that takes up RAM. So it slows down your computer.
I'm the worst. I have so many. I have like, you know, the swipe off. I've literally learned this, no exaggeration, 3 months ago about swiping off. One of my friends said, he goes, no, the reason that your battery's drained is because of all of them that are running in the background. I did not know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So, oh, wow.
And your practice, when you did it, you're able to read these things.
You can read them because we, in Chinese medicine and kinesiology being using the muscular system to assess what's going on internally because every muscle is connected by nerves, blood flow, and the lymph nodes to certain organs. So as they're connected through the nervous system, if a muscle is strong or weak, it would tell you if the organ is functioning at 100% or not. Emotions, according to Chinese medicine, and now they're starting to show more in psychology that the health of an organ can determine if a person suffers from a certain type of emotion. So what I would assess and come into, they call them the beginning and ending points of acupuncture. You can actually show a person certain points on the body and rub on them and they'll be very tender and it can tell you if there is a blockage of energy to that organ. So let's say if an organ is imbalanced, like say your lungs, or let's make that the example. We know that the lungs have a lot to do with us being able to express our emotions by crying or singing. And so what they say is a healthy lung is joyful and singing and you can express yourself. Wow. But if it's sick, you are stuffing crying, grief, sadness and crying and yearning. So if the point is tender, you can do a series of points to help open up the lung qi, the energy, and get electricity and blood flow to the organ and let the organ do what it's supposed to do to create balance, to allow your craving and crying to come out. So let's say somebody got abused and their symptoms are, man, I just start crying for no reason at all. I feel like I got to well up. You start pressing on these points, finding the frequency changes on the skin, open it up. And I mean, daily, I have people come in and they're like, I was just sitting at the stoplight and I just started bawling. And I've had people text me and go, is it okay for me to cry for 2 days straight? Like, literally, I think I'm going crazy. And wow. They're being serious. And yeah, it's okay. Just cry it out. You just stuffed it. It's that closet. It's that old app.
So this is after you've worked on them.
Yes.
They're telling you, I'm crying for 2 days straight.
Yes. Most of the time when the information is deep set within your nervous system or within the tissue, I do go back to frequency. You press it down. You had the volume up on the nerve. When it first happened to you, you say, I'm going to turn it down, but it's still humming in the nerve. And then you start to open up electricity flow back in that nerve. It starts to amplify the sound and starts coming to the surface. And it'll make you sick in the tissue because the difference in frequencies or the vibrational changes from that old trauma vibrates the tissue all around the nerve. So the nerve starts to get sick. Uh-huh. I mean, and the tissue gets sick.
So who was the one that did the experimentation to find out, like, that these things give off? Because this is, like, I'm sure these people that are listening, if you have a faith-based background, mm-hmm. Especially Christianity, the idea of chi, the idea of Eastern medicine, the idea of actual, like, some people have problems with it because it comes from a place that they don't understand, nor do we, you know, are taught to identify with.
Yeah.
But I what I love about a dispenser like you is that it's now coming into science, and now science is apart from all type of religion. It's just facts. Show me numbers, show me facts, that equals science. So now science is backing up these certain things, right?
Definitely. I think that science, all sciences like physics, chemistry, are all based on philosophy. Truly, they are all based. If you go back, they're based on philosophy. And it's like deconstructing certain individuals' faith, because in this realm, in a positive way, I was raised in a very strict Christian home, and to incorporate spirituality in some fashion into my practice was an alarm for, like, even my father, who is a very, I love my dad, he's a very strict Baptist man. And even me having long hair is probably not the best thing for my dad. So when I grew up, when you talked about anything, like, he even encouraged, like, since I came from Asian background, my grandfathers, my great-grandfathers used to do Tai Chi. He didn't discourage that, but when I went to church, they thought that's mysticism and that's witchcraft.
Mm.
But I could even, if anybody would come to me from church and say, like, this is some form of mysticism or some form of new age, like, you could read books by this gentleman, Robert Becker. He's a MD. And I'm not promoting him, but there's other ones about the scientific methods behind the electricity that runs through the body. And all electricity creates frequency. And when I first, to go back to being in church and having this fear that it wouldn't be accepted, that was a big hindrance to me when I first got into this area, because in the South, it's like the Bible Belt, and you think, how are people going to perceive this type of sound therapy? But if you read back in Scripture, and I'm not a theologian, I'm not acting, but they say God spoke the word into the world into existence. And when you study electricity, and you study the body and how it's run off of light and electricity, the reflectivity of light, the way our bodies use each cell as a mirror. And they say that light is passed between cells, and that's how information is passed in our bodies, and that's how people see us, is the reflection of light. The electricity is information that passes down through our system. And basically, they're all ran through vibration and wavelength. That's how they measure them. If you read books like this, they actually do quite a bit of experimentation to show you how frequency emanates off the body, and you can change a person or have them change you by the amount of light and electricity that passes through their body. And there's many experiments and lots of journals that talk about it. But going back to spiritual aspect, I'm thinking, if I prayed, and this is my question to me, guys, why would anybody believe if I prayed for somebody that's in North Dakota, why would you saying something into the air change the physiology of somebody in North Dakota? Please help them with their bad shoulder. Why would anybody believe that? I would have to trust that my words somehow go to a higher source or transfer, and that frequency from my voice makes such an imprint, and they call it in the ether, in the higher consciousness, that other person perceives the frequency, it enters their body, changes it to a biochemical reaction, and changes their cells. That's what we're saying when we pray. That's my view.
Yeah.
So if I went into my churches and they may think I'm weird, I'm like, if you're praying, it's almost like not an incantation, but you're trying to pray for a spirit to come down and to create something so metaphysical. But what I'm doing is trying to read vibrations that God gave to the body, and you may think it's unusual. Like,
that is interesting when you think of prayer that way.
I would say, I'm sure there's going to be some people to say like, oh, well, you're just taking God out of it. If you're saying that the frequency from your mouth is received in that person's body, or I think some people may see prayer as like you're saying words to the big guy up there, and then hopefully he does the things, but like you don't really have anything to do with it. You're just asking, hey, can you do this for me? Can you heal that person for me? But I'm just asking him to do it. I don't have nothing to do with that. But I love this perspective of prayer, because I would now see it as like twofold. Like me praying it for someone, like say my husband, right? I am one, connecting to God. I'm communicating with God, with my creator, mm-hmm. and using prayer to help my husband. But at the same time, now there's a scientific reason to pray for my husband, so that I can send from my mouth these vibrations to help him with whatever he's dealing with. So I would look at it as like, amen, that's two reasons why we should pray.
That's right. And when you pray more and more, I love how they would even tell us in church, like, pray without ceasing. And science research has been showing that when we pray to our divine source, that it actually increases the size of that pineal pituitary axis. The gland in your brain actually grows. That's why a monk will go into a theta frequency, because a theta frequency increases the size of the pineal gland. But as you increase the gland, it makes you more receptive to more of the energy or the frequencies around. And so I just did that. But it makes you more receptive to the frequencies that are around you, and they say in your environment. So what we're saying is this: as I increase and I pray more and get mm-hmm. myself into a meditative prayer, the more I'm connecting to God, the more receptive I get to him. And then you get more receptive to what Manny has. Like, he can think a thought, and you've tuned, and you're increasing your pineal gland. You're getting the vibration mechanism. It's like that, you know, when a boxer boxes, bunch. You're getting your pineal gland to be able to receive information like a bell. So if you guys talk to each other all day, you can think of him and say his name, and he creates a specific frequency into you. And all of a sudden, you create an instant connection. He can think about you, and your pineal gland feels it, and it creates a chemical change. Mm. So how you think of him and how you pray, you can not bypass God. I don't believe you bypass God. I'm saying this, but you have the ability to think God within. God has given you the ability to say something to Manny or think something about him and send healing vibrations to him.
Mm. Well, see, and here's the crazy thing. We think bypass God only because we're using terminology that is unknown to us.
So we think,
but this idea, it's like humans are just catching up to God. This is not new to God. The idea of energy, you know, when you're talking about God spoke things into existence, you know, sound is just vibration.
Yes.
When you look at your vocal cords that produce the sound, I only know this because I have my nodes taken out when I had surgery. My vocal cords are doing this all the time, like moving in this thing, and the vibration of them in this pattern is what causes sound.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
When they're not doing this and they're just doing this, that's when I ended up getting hoarse. Mm. So I would see them vibrating in a slow motion and doing this, but like super fast. You can't see it with your eye, but when they slow it down, and I was like, man, this is how God created our bodies to give off these vibrations, these sounds. Man is just catching up to it.
Right.
Church is just catching up to normal man that's catching up to it.
Right.
Because we'd rather think faith is not mysticism because we have an idea of who we're praying to. So that makes it not mystic.
Oh,
but when you break it down, you're just praying to something unseen,
mm-hmm.
hoping that the unseen is real enough to hear this prayer.
Mm.
Anyone who doesn't know Jesus or about God would think you are crazy.
That's exactly right. Because you are saying something into the air. And like,
into
what,
the air.
What are you, who are you talking to?
Who the hell are you talking to?
Mm-hmm.
But yet we count that as a foundation of our mm-hmm. faith.
Yep.
So a foundation of our faith is speaking into the air to no one, hoping that someone hears it, that somewhere up there, even though he's really inside, mm-hmm. again, orating from you, creating a vibe. So what he's saying, the energy that we give off, that's why they say misery loves company, because the vibration of misery connects with your misery. And I know that the waves with each other, they go like this, right? They end up like an infinity
yep.
sign is what they do when you vibe together. And so you're vibing because you're both on the same frequency. You're both miserable. So happy people can't hang out with miserable people, which is why it's like, right. I can't hang out with that person too long, because it's literally taking energy from me. You just think of it as like emotional, but those emotions have ones and zeros behind them. Like it's all like measurable.
It's measurable. And to think that when I went to, let's say, church, or I was talking to people like, what kind of things do you do? And then finally finding something that's measurable, and then deconstructing it to say something like, I'm praying to something and nobody can see what I'm praying to, it opened up doors, like within my own faith, to realize the intricacies and the magic behind who we are. And that may sound very corny, but it really is. It's like there's certain vibrations and tones that are spoken into us that created us. And then there is a strength within us that allows, that God, I believe, has allowed us to perform, not just say on our own, but he given us the ability to do it. So when we talk about in churches, we talk about prophetic individuals or individuals who can speak a word of life, who can heal people. And then there's another, like there's certain denominations that say that's just hogwash. Miracles don't happen today. And then you have, and you go, heavens, like where do you, which part do you believe and which part do you go with? And I'm thankful through this journey that seeing people that have had good results, not because of what I did, it's just opening up energetic pathways and seeing how it affected them physically. It's like, it just proves to me, it's like we're all so unique and we all have the power to help each other heal, and we can create so much community. And over, I think it's 15 years now, there has been so many times when I've had people come in and go, that's crazy. You're crazy. And now I kind of feel like it's a badge of honor when somebody thinks I'm kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to church or anything that way. I'm like, that's actually, I hope that I would let the Spirit communicate with me, indwell me. The expression of who I believe is God, is Christ, comes through me. And I think it's where we get heaven on earth.
Mm.
It's like, are you going to live with him here now and express it? And now, like the whole idea of any concept of or idea of sin is when I think you don't allow the full expression to come through. Like, what's holding that full expression back? I'm not saying I help with that. I think that we each help each other finding the blockages within each other. And I'm thankful in my job every day, I can find some blockages, and hopefully it opens up the pathway for they can find the full expression of who God wants them to be. I'm not saying I have that ability or that gift, but I believe there is some form of that kind of healing that happens in the office, and I'm thankful for that.
Well, I mean, it's definitely happening, because you're just doing it on a different level. It's like the Socratic method, if you think about it. Like Socrates, it was a method that I learned a while back, which generally what it is asking questions to get an answer, but you don't ever answer it. The person who's answering the question will eventually answer the question for themselves. So say you got a question from me, and this always happens between us, and this is why I laugh, because she thinks I question her for bad reasons, but I'm like, I know she has the answer inside of her.
Oh,
so
it's so frustrating.
Why?
It's because why? Listen, it's like we go to therapy and stuff, and the therapist will like ask you questions to help you discover.
Yeah.
So sure, the answer is within me, right?
Yeah.
And so what a therapist does is they have tact and they talk to you, ask you questions. So maybe by the end of this session, if not this session, maybe in 5 sessions from now, mm-hmm. you discover like, oh my God, this whole time it's been because blah, 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 blah. Amazing revelation. And then so like if we're having a talk,
yeah,
and my husband asked me a question of why I feel a certain way, and I go, I don't know. No, you know.
No, I don't do it like that. But I do believe
he 100% says
it like that. I do believe people know when they say they don't know.
Even if he said it real soft, no, you know. And I go, no, actually, I don't know. No,
yeah,
you do know.
Yeah.
Okay, well, maybe I can do the work to find out. It's not going to happen in these next 5 minutes. Right. No, you. And then he'll keep asking me more questions to try to get me to figure it out, like right there while I'm trying to get ready to go to an audition or something. And then, so I will get frustrated and when he's talking about the type of questioning
yeah.
and asking questions, I'll say, you can ask someone a question mm-hmm. and then you can question them. And it's totally different. It's a different way of communicating.
But you know what's interesting? You know what's interesting? What Dr. Motley was saying, which I wanted to bring up, he's literally talking about there are tones in ways that people communicate. And maybe correct me if I'm crazy on this one, but could it be that there is a certain register or a frequency in which my voice may be that reminds you or that is hitting something in you that recognizes a tone in the past? Because I always ask you, I say, babe, am I really doing everything that you say I'm doing? Or is there a possibility that you have, like you're hearing with a filter, like there's a filter that you have over your ears because you're, when you perceive a tone, it triggers you and you, this person is attacking me. And it doesn't matter if the person is attacking you or not, you hear it in a way that it triggers you because maybe in the past, somewhere in your childhood, that frequency denotes an emotion. It's saying, get ready, because whatever's coming next is negative. So the reason I'm consistently trying to break through that with you is because in the past, there were probably people trying to degrade you, trying to break you down, trying to manipulate you, trying to whatever in that tone, in that frequency. Your husband, who I'm down for you, you know that I've never done a single thing to try to harm or set you back. I'm your number one supporter, number one cheerleader. I always lift you up. There's not a fiber in my being that looks at you and tries to degrade or down or not even subversively, subconsciously. I just don't see you that way. Everything I talk to you about is because I'm like, she has the potential to be all this. And I know we're together for that because I see what you do in me. So that's why I always challenge you to say, hey, man, instead of always saying it's the way this person communicates to you, and this goes for anybody listening, mm-hmm. instead of being, I think that's the easy way. The easy way is to say someone is communicating to me in a frequency that is affecting me in a negative way. And so that person is, they must mean it this way, mm-hmm. as opposed to saying, maybe I'm hearing it a certain way because I'm used to that frequency being a negative thing or someone coming at me mm-hmm. in that way to try and hurt me. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So my friends can scream at me all day long. They can try to whatever. They can try to like talk down to me. And I never hear that. I only hear what they're saying because a long time ago, I started recognizing that people are going to be passionate. People, if there's anything important, and who says this? Jordan Peterson always uh-huh. says this. He says, if there is something important to talk about, someone will be offended. It is an inevitability because only important things mean something to people. And if you say something that means anything, someone is going to be offended because there are too many people out there that may think differently than you do, and they're going to take it in a way based on how they've been raised, things that they have gone through. So it's impossible to not offend. Just like within a marriage, it's impossible to not offend you or you to maybe offend me if we allow the past to be connected to the present. So I choose to say, I don't care how you say it, I'm going to try to hear what you're saying. And I will base my decision on whether I'm going to be angry, sad, mad on what you're saying. And if it's true or valid. Because if you come at me in a certain way, like blah, 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 but you're saying some truth, I may be pissed, but really I'm just mad because you're telling me the truth. Does that make sense?
Yeah. What do you say to those thoughts?
I would say true when the trigger, the vibration that may trigger an old program, right, to be activated. So you could hear a sound or a tone that reminds you of an old program that's been stuffed, an old app that's there, and you open it up. The one thing I would say that anybody that's getting triggered, I tell them to look at your battery percentage. The hardest part is when, now I'm not acting like a marriage counselor. I'm just saying, like, if a person is saying, what do you mean by that? What's the deeper issue? What's going on inside? The person that receives it could be, they say, I could be triggered, but their battery power could be at like 30%. The hardest part is that the person who wants to be, you know, involved and dig deep, to find out their percentage of battery power at that moment, they'll be in positive. But what happens is you automatically may think ahead and go, if I had this conversation now, I'll go into the negative. So you'll go negative battery power. And so you start to
because you think it.
You're thinking it and you go, okay, I don't know if I have enough energy for that to give it a validation, like this is going to be a good response. And what will occur is, you know, the trigger is occurring. You go, okay, there's a trigger and it's starting to open up. I'm going to go into negative. The hardest part is then a lot of the older apps, a lot of old apps start to stir up because you don't have enough energy. You don't have enough energy to keep them all at bay. Mm. It makes you have that app, that program that's starting to run. Manny tells you something. You're like, oh, I got to get into that. But you go, but I don't have enough energy. And if I can't keep all these other apps running that are in the background, they'll start to open up if I get in underneath. And so you know that in your body.
Mm.
And that's why you're tired, right? You'll say, people say that. I'm just too tired to talk about it. I can't, because your body is in preservation mode. You're in yin yang. You go, I just spent all this energy the part of the day. And I can't have this for the rest. So it's that push and pull, that tug, mm-hmm. right? It's like, Manny's like, I need to go into this. You're like, oh man, I'm tired. I don't know which one to do. They both reveal though, things you both are working on. So the awareness that you need to work on it is great. So does that make sense? It's like, I wish I had this. Man, if I had a percentage bar on my shoulder, whoever makes that is a billionaire. Because if I had somebody to metabolically tell me how much energy I had left over, like in a bad, if I had to go to a meeting or something, and at the end of the day it says, dude, you only got 15% left. I'm like, that's going to take 30%.
Right.
Gone.
Right.
No more.
Right.
And I love digging down deep about finding the old program. But I'm going to be the first one, like, to tell you this. Whenever I'm dealing or working on people all day, when I get done, somebody will say something to me, like especially like my mom. My mom's a little Korean lady, little mama chong. You know what she said to me last night? I'm not making fun of her. She's a little Korean lady. She's a strong Korean accent. So I went to check on her. She's had some health issues. Go to check on her last night. And she goes, where are you at? I was like, and she goes, oh, yeah. Where you been? I was like, I had two meetings. And she, when I said two meetings, she perceives it as you're wearing yourself out. It opens up trigger. And I had a surgery at the end of 2017. I almost died because there's a ruptured ulcer. Wow. But it scared my mom. So whenever she says you have a lot of meetings, she perceives it as you're wearing yourself out. This is going to happen again. And she goes, I'm mad. Like, I went, oh, Ma. Like, it's like, Mom, what? Okay, what are you doing? She goes, you don't think about your body. Yes, I'm mad. Just walks off. And I was like, come on. You know what I mean? And the first thing is like, what did I do wrong? And then I invested. I went, no, I spoke what I believed. And she perceived it a certain way. We both have our apps running. It's okay. I'm a little tired. I can't get into that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But knowing that you guys have this communication open, that's what it'll eventually work out.
I feel like I agree with what my husband's saying about the vibration of his voice. It triggers an old app in me,
mm-hmm.
and all of those things are true. And how he's saying how, like, I decided years ago that I'm going to respond this way and that way and that way. Those are all great things and that I believe. But I also think there's validity to things like the Enneagram number.
Mm-hmm.
The way we communicate, the way certain people have the ability, like, for instance, my husband has the ability, if I say, this bothers me, mm-hmm. and can you change that? He'll change it like that. Done. Mm. Immediately. Mm. Fixed. And other people don't have that gift to just change it immediately like that, where it's not just an easy decision to, oh, I just decide and now I'm this way. I just decide and now I don't do this. I just decide and now I don't hear my husband through a filter, or when that vibration comes out, I just decide I don't get triggered. It's bigger than I just decide.
Well, what Dr. Molly was saying was, it takes how many times? You said 800 to
1,000 times.
To 1,000 times to tell yourself that this is what it is. So as much, and again, this is like all like sound therapy or what. When you hear that sound, when you hear that frequency, it's up to you to decide what you're going to interpret that as. Now, we can be lazy, like he's saying. Our percentage can be down to be like, I'm going to continue to believe this because it takes less effort to believe or to leave the old program
running.
I think
lazy is a negative term. Maybe use a different term. We could be exhausted.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exhausted.
Exhausted. And we don't, it's not, we're not going to find the time. It's like people, okay, it's like people who get too busy and don't want to find time to the gym. Like they know if they went to the gym, it's going to benefit them. But there's so many things going on in their life that they just get exhausted and tired and they never make it to the gym. In the same way, when you're hearing a frequency, you're able to, as a human being, to decipher the person that is speaking to you. If you know them, especially if they're close to you, does this person have good intent towards me? Have they proven to me to be someone who loves me genuinely? And do they want good for me? Because if that is the case, then whatever's going to come out of that mouth, I am choosing to believe because I know them, I know their heart, that they want the best for me. So in the same way, that's how I choose to live my life. I always say time will tell. So with my friends, with my whatever, I always say it's really, really hard to offend me. It doesn't matter how you say things because I'm like, okay, this person is a lifer in my life. He's gone through too much. I know they love me. This person loves me. So they may say things out of emotion. They may say things out of whatever, but I know it's because they're in these situations. It's not because they're trying to hurt me. It's just because right. they're feeling their situation.
Maybe you can speak to this too. We had a therapist tell us like how you're saying like in the moment when that's happening, I can decide this person is for me. No.
I decided that before, like way before. So the in the moment, that's not going through my mind. So with me and you, I've decided this is my wife. And every time she's ever talked to me, she's wanted the best for me. Anytime she's ever talked to me, she's only wanted the best for me.
So in the moment, we had a therapist talk about parts of the brain, and I don't remember the exact names of them, but she's talking about like, and shows her hand as like a fist and how these parts are connected. And then once something's triggered, they start raising up. And once they're not connected anymore, this person is not thinking straight. They're not going to
something
respond.
Something about lizard where there's like a logic part, the like five parts that
reptilian
brain.
There we
yes.
go.
Yes.
So they're saying, because there's three brains.
Yeah. Can you talk about that? Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yes. As if you unlock certain portions of, I hope this is taking into account properly, like the reptilian brain. The reptilian brain is, they say, the basic instinct. So when you open up the reptilian brain, you go into self-preservation. So your number one thing is red in tooth and claw. It's when you start to unravel, logic does start to go out the door.
Right.
Because you are attacking a person's self-preserving actions, and that part of the brain, like the reptilian portion, is separated from what they call the hippocampus or the emotional brain, and a few other, which gets too technical in my opinion. But when you start to work out of pure instinct, they say that you're not connecting to your subconscious, is inhibited or not wanting to connect with superconscious or higher conscious. So anytime that you're in a relationship and you start to open up the reptilian brain, you are going into pre-programs that not only are something like Manny said, you had a belief or a thought that became a belief because of repetitional thoughts, but it also takes into account the genetic memory. So I'm not trying to get too far into that, but it also opens up that idea, like from a mother or from a father, something incorporated their DNA into developing the reptilian brain, and even their traumas become your traumas.
And which I think in spiritual terms, generational curses.
Yeah. The sins of the father go to the sins of the children. And I think that when you're in a relationship, and as much as you guys show affection for each other, there's that still that grip where we still want to preserve. Mm-hmm. And that's what they would say, Freud would say, and say it was the ego. Mm-hmm. Like it starts to unravel the ego. And we have a conditioned self. So anytime when you say, if he says, let's get into this, let's dig into this, and I would say it gets us exhausted and fatigue. Mm-hmm. I really do think the reptilian brain shows like sort of that strong personality. Like Manny, I can tell he's a driver, like he achiever. Like I'm telling you, like he's like my mom. I'm not kidding. My mom like you. If my mom says today, I'm not going to eat sugar. You know, my mom will not. She's like, no, I'm not doing it. Not hard.
Right.
You know me? I'm like that. They call the 9 personality. I'm just like, are you okay?
I'm a 9.
Are you all right about that? Because I'll say anything to make everybody uncomfortable, because I'm only going to go to sleep if everybody in the whole room is comfortable.
Uh-huh.
And then you start to think about like, how did Manny think about that? I hope Manny liked this. I mean, that's how it is. Manny's like, no, A plus B is equal to C.
Right.
That's not me. I don't. That's you.
Right.
And then so I'm perceiving everything like how I think about a program that's initiated by somebody that comes to me. I don't know how you are, but if somebody would come to me, if Manny came to me, he was like, we're digging in deep and we're going to find out about this. My mind goes into, okay, do I have enough energy, or does this going to affect so many other people around? That's how I start to think. I'm like, oh man, am I going to hurt Manny's feeling by saying this, or does it affect this? And that's the reptilian instinct coming out, because genetically you have this personality. That's what we get into Zodiac and the Enneagram. And I know it goes even further than that, like how you develop in the womb.
Right.
Is that, I hope that answered the question. But
no, it's great. So for everybody who's listening, like we're using Manny and myself and our relationship as examples, but I'm sure there's people listening who identify either with me or with Manny. And it's so great to see that it's all of this that we're saying. It's me being able to repeat 800 to 1,000 times to reprogram my neurotransmitters and my memories, and doing the self-work on whatever needs to be done for if he does have a vibration that triggers me, what is the work that needs to be done within that? So all of those things are definitely work that we need to do on ourselves. And then it's also true for somebody in Manny's position to see that sometimes we can't just decide to be in that moment. He's on my team, so this threatening tone is not threatening. It's this part of my brain already disconnected, so this is bad news from this moment on. This conversation will not be productive because I'm already disconnected. So it's both. It's understanding from his side, and it's me needing to do the work on my side so that we can meet in the middle. And I think that's going to be all of our lives, because like we were sitting with Mariah's parents, and they've been married 32 years, and they're discovering new things. Just yesterday, I learned this about my wife, and 32 years married, and they're still, you know, like figuring it out and going through their seasons. And just, you know, he was like, I noticed I was getting frustrated and impatient with her about XYZ. And then so it's just, for me, this is a hopeful conversation, because it's like there is no perfect fix. You never get to, great, we arrived, now we communicate perfectly, and no arguments for the rest of our lives, or no strong talks for the rest of our lives. It's all iron's gonna sharpen iron for the rest of our lives. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the more that we have a grasp of this knowledge and understanding, that we can have more grace for ourselves, for each other. So maybe the argument, we still have it, but it's not as passionate, or it's not as long. Maybe they're shorter now. No, you don't agree with anything I'm saying?
No, I agree with some of what you're saying. I agree with some of it.
You just laugh and shook your head. So what?
Well, I guess because the 8 in me is like, when you say maybe we will have these arguments, and what I think is, no, you don't have to have those arguments. You'll have arguments because, like Mariah's parents, new things come up. But you don't have to have the same arguments. Mm. I think the problem within relationships, and something that I always call out, is that it's easy to say you're going to do the work, but doing the work is a lot harder.
It is.
And what dictates...
It's hard, and you need new knowledge and things like that. Like, even just hearing some of the things that you're talking about today, like saying that you can reprogram your neurotransmitters and your memories, mm-hmm. and the saying things 800 to 1,000 times. Like, that's a new piece of wisdom.
And we don't have to do it in one day. We're saying, like, right. you just, like, over your times, like, over the right. months, years, and you can start to say, like, that, you start to reprogram, yeah. yeah.
And I'm not but trying to say we're going to have the same argument well, over
here's
and
what
over.
Here's what I was trying to say. I think the... I'm a type of person that I don't like to give myself an out on right things to do.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Yeah. So when I say, hey, we should work on this, that means immediately, because I think the desire to work on something stems from a desire to see that situation fixed. Mm-hmm. So if it's dire, you're going to work on it now. Or if you really want it to be better, it's something that you start working on that day, like changing the way you see things, changing the way you hear things, and making an effort to do it immediately. Because we do, as humans, I think we put things off too easily. Like we'll get information all day long, but we won't really allow that information to affect us until the drastic happens, until the worst happens.
Yes.
So we'll get information like, this is unhealthy for you. Eating like this is unhealthy. Smoking is unhealthy. We know the information, but it never is important right now, because ego usually gets in the way and self usually takes a front seat to anything else. It's just usually how we are as human beings. Self-preservation is usually at the top of the list. So it's hard to not be in a pit situation where you have to choose self-preservation and still decide, I'm going to work on this. I'm going to do it because I know I need to, and I know it's going to make me a healthier person, and it's going to help a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so in all that, Molly, I'm wondering, when you get patients in here, do you find that they're more often than not the problem is emotional, or do you think more often than not it's bacterial or actual sickness? Like, is there a clear like thing where you're like, man, most of these people are sick because of...
We could say, I try never to go and to funnel it down to like just one thing would cause everything.
Right. Because
there is that belief where we talk, hear it often about how emotions create all problems. I'm asking you guys' opinion because I'm a nine. But I would say that I do believe that the emotional imprints or the traumas that are passed through our genetics have an emotional and a spiritual tie that infuses with us when we're babies. In Chinese medicine, they call it the Shen. The Shen is the mind. They say that right when we're conceived, the mind is placed within us, and it has a lot to do with the mother and father, the meeting of their energy, their chi, the original chi, they call it, enters us.
Mm.
You say, what is the promotion of all health problems? In the office, if I go back in a certain step to try to find out what's going on with you, both of you, when we talked and we've been worked on you before and with all my patients, I try to find every emotional program that's running. The body may do this. This is how I perceive it. The body will layer out. You may not have an emotion show up that says this is the cause of your problems. You may come in and I say you have strep in your throat. But if you really went back to the throat as an example, you would find out, like they call it throat chakra or the fifth center, something kept the voice back. Something literally kept you from expressing who you are. And you can usually trace it back to how the parents and the father, their energy, their chi entered to you. There is an emotional tie to it. So I am cautious about when I say it's all emotion, because as many of you have said before, when you have an old memory or something coming from the parent, we usually tag it with the emotion. It's an experience and we perceive it as bad because we tag it with fear or anger or hate or frustration. So not everything's emotional, but I do believe that the genetic influence of spirit and emotion from the parents coming in is a big root of health. And I'm going on a limb on that because I can almost take every problem that a person comes into and trace it back to a stress emotion of some sort. And the thing, if you came in or you came in and they said, I do that every day. That's exactly what I do. When a person releases that memory or that programming, their body then has the capacity to handle all their other stresses. Like, I don't care if I have bacteria or mold or virus. I have the energy now to go process them out. And that's what, that's why emotional work or the recognition of spirit, how that the original chi came into your body and realize, like, where did my parents come from? What was their programming? What are the epigenetics in my life? And breaking it down now, that is probably the main thing I focus on when a person comes in. What are the main original chi issues that came into your life? So it is hilarious, guys, when people come in, they're like, I got a bad shoulder. I'm like, you don't got a bad shoulder. Like, and they go, what? I was actually,
you got bitterness.
You got, that's like, you got some anger issues. I wish it was just like that. But when you want to retrace, like you say, be aggressive and finding out what would cause that issue, then you have to take into account, like you said, their personality type. For me as a 9, if you worked on me, I had the tendency when I get tired to be procrastinate. I don't mean to. It's just I get so tired. Like, I'll put it off. I got it. And so when you work on somebody, their personality literally mimics, or their healing mimics how their personality is. So if Manny's like an 8 and he comes in, you start working on him, his body will process like, doom, 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 doom. Let's get it going. Mine is like, let's take my time. Let me find the most easy route. So it's hard because then you realize if you're working on people or a relationship, you have to take into consideration like how they process info. And that's the hardest part about what I do. You know what I mean?
It's summa cum laude over here, a couple years of junior college. Like, no, it's process info differently.
It's true because I sometimes am like, I'm like, this makes total sense. And I am guilty of that. I'm guilty of expecting people to process or think the way I think, as if the way I think is like the best way ever. But I just think, You should probably know these things. They're very simple.
You both process so quickly, like literally, like, and I'm not the judge of this, but you know, you guys process so fast, like your words, like he said, inevitably, really quick. Now you think, what does that mean? And you took everything we just said and summarized it in a span of like 2 minutes, and I'm like,
it's bright, I'm glad I got it right.
Oh my goodness.
Because that's one of our arguments too, is we'll argue about the argument and he'll say, what did I just say? And I'll say it. He goes, nope, that's not what I said. So usually I don't wrap things up very well. No, usually I miss something.
The reason it's like that is because, again, and this is why I think it's beautiful what he's talking about and what his practice is this idea. And I'm only coming into this year. I started studying even more because I'm like, I want to get smarter, especially with this podcasting. I need to gather information so that I can speak more eloquently and just have more knowledge at my disposal. And when I started doing a dive into Dispenza and Krista and you also, I'm intrigued because I'm like, man, when he broke down the idea, and so many people get hung up on this, the idea that memories, that the only real is the now, but most people don't live in the now, they live in the past because their memories they bring into the now based on how they feel about things. So they don't react based on what's happening now, they react on how they've felt in the past, and then they're interpreting it through their past. So if there's a guy or a girl that reminds you of someone in the past, you instantly now have that filter and you're seeing them through that filter, kind of like when we met and you was kind of real cold with me because you got out of a relationship of a guy that mimicked who I was. Christian, love God, on stage, said all the right things. I reminded her. So without her even trying to, she started treating me a certain way. Now she'll tell it that, oh, you were just upset that I didn't just, you know, was easy for you. And I'm like, nah, that ain't it. It's that I knew I was paying for somebody else's mistakes.
Yeah.
I reminded you of something and you were making me pay for that someone because you saw me through that guy. So I think like the fascination is if most people can get this, if most people can understand that your past is attached with certain emotions, that if you can replace those emotions with something positive, i.e. an example is, my dad always talked to me in a negative way. He always talked down to me, mm-hmm. and it creates something in you that's like very like volatile. So whenever somebody even comes close to sounding like they talk down to you, you're like ready. You're mm-hmm. ready to defend. You could look at it like that because you're like, I don't want anybody ever to make me feel small again mm-hmm. or stupid. So this is how I'm going to protect myself. That's one way. That's like a false noble way to do it. I'm going to protect myself. I am woman. I will be strong. Or dad talked to me this way because he didn't have a dad to talk to him in a positive way. So he was just really trying to communicate to me that he loved me. Mm. But the fool doesn't know how. His education stopped at this level. And he never continued trying to learn himself or anyone else. Mm. He never stepped foot in a therapist's office. Right. He never read a single therapy book. Mm. So I'm expecting a guy who emotionally is at a fourth grade level to think collegiately.
Mm.
And that's not realistic. Mm-hmm. So then I can now look at him like I always did with my parents. I remember the day that I looked at my parents and I was like, you're just a boy and a girl. That's all you are. You're not mm-hmm. my parents. You're a boy and a girl. You're upset because he screams louder than you. You wish you could scream louder than him, but you can't. So then what do? You scream at me because I'm a kid and I can't scream louder than you. Mm. So you take everything out on me. So I never held anything against my parents. Even though my mom would call me the worst nicknames or my dad was abusive, mm-hmm. I didn't hold it against him. Why? Because I knew my dad was from the streets since he was 14 years old. His dad was the streets. And what happens in the streets? It's kill or be killed. Fight. Earn. Take respect.
Mm.
So the day that me and my dad respected each other was the day that I knocked him out. Wow. I got in a fight with him and I knocked his ass out. And then our relationship got better. And I was like, what the? And then the Lord let me see, you just earned his respect because how he was raised in the street, that is how someone got his respect. So welcome to respect. And me and him had a best relationship ever since then. So I didn't see my quote unquote abuse as negative. I saw it as, oh snap, my dad choked me and threw me across the room. So I got up and I knocked his ass out. And now we're boys.
Mm.
Because I spoke his language. I don't get hung up on the fact that he choked me and threw me across the room. I'm like, he was just expressing himself how he knew. Plus, mm-hmm. he used to drink a lot. So I take that as, oh, this is him doing the best he can. And me knocking him out unknowingly just earned his love.
Wow.
So I don't have any trauma with my parents.
Mm.
I don't have a single negative feeling. I just remember a good time growing up
mm-hmm.
because of what emotions I attached to those past memories. So everybody has the ability to do it, yeah. but it takes letting go, wanting to be right
mm-hmm.
or wanting to be egocentric in it. Like, no, they need to recognize that they did something wrong. Mm. They need to apologize to me. And if they don't, they win.
Mm.
I love it. Do you believe, like, with that type of, I mean, it's not that truth in your life, does that show us the avenue of trust, as in we talk about in the scripture that says all things work out for your good
right. mm-hmm.
if you let God flow through you. And I'm saying it would be a practice of trust to take a negative, or quote how we view it as a negative memory
mm.
that created a memory that created a negative emotion. And we look at it and go, that was for my bad. But if we're at the place we're at now and we could see the positive aspect where it filtered out, say that it was for my good, that is a practice of trust. So you increase trust. I'm saying that you can reprogram
yeah.
to see the old trauma as something good because that increases your trust. It is to pull off that negative emotion. So that's where I think like we'd have to keep looking at the fight.
Well, because if you think about the fight, okay, you think about the way you were raised, and there, you know, you can say, "Oh, my dad was this way," and we, you know, all the children have a problem with pops. But I think everybody has a unique way now of coping. You happen to be able to turn your unique way into a freaking insanely successful career. So, thanks, Dad, because mm-hmm. you forced me to think quickly, even mm-hmm. though you intended you thought you were doing the best you can. It byproduct hurt me, but I also learned this new skill, which I think quicker off my feet. Her whole family is super quick. They're all funny, super quick, like mad quick. And I think this is their coping mechanism to get through their childhood.
Mm-hmm.
So if they can grab that and be like, you know what, that dude tried. He didn't do it as bad. He didn't. Right. He didn't know any better. Mm-hmm. But what he gave me from that experience was now I'm funny as hell, and now my yeah. life is exponentially better than his because of what I went through. And I think like Drake had a line in one of his songs where he's talking to his mom, and he tells his mom like, "Hey, like who are we not to forgive him? Like look how we're living."
That's right.
He taught me how to do this. He taught me how to do this. And yeah, I had to visit him in prison, but that's also how I learned to stay out of trouble.
Yeah.
And then his homeboy took care of me, and he taught me how to shoot guns, and he taught me how to the streets, which also kept me off of the streets. Mm. So him being away from us pushed us together, and at the same time gave me all this knowledge that has propelled me into the biggest artist of the world. So he's kind of telling his mom, like, look where we're at.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just got me a Grammy. Like, we don't have to worry about money ever again. Like, I think it's time to let it go.
Yeah.
Can you speak to, and you kind of already have, but just as we're using this example, like, it's so interesting to bring up one of my sessions with you. So I've learned a lot about my relationship with my dad, about my dad. And I remember when my husband told me the whole, like, our parents are just kids who grew up, they're in adult bodies, mm-hmm. but they're just kids trying to figure it out. Like nobody knows how to do any of it. Mm-hmm. Right. And I remember that bringing so much freedom and being able to see my dad in a different way and have more grace for him. And I am light years from where I was years ago. When it comes to how I see my dad, communicate with him, and all of that stuff. And so I've learned a lot in my brain. I can articulate these things now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my dad just did the best he could with what, and I can see it. And I go, oh, that's why he said this and whatever. When I first decided to pursue my dreams, I said, Dad, I'm going to be an actress. I'm moving to Hollywood. And he said, why are you going to do that? You don't know anything. Nobody's going to hire you.
Oh.
It's because he was scared.
Yeah. Yeah.
He didn't get to chase his dream. He was afraid for me.
Mm.
So I can look back at those words that were so hurtful for me, mm-hmm. but I can articulate and see, oh, he said that because of this, da 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 da, whatever, right? So I've worked through all of this in therapy and even with the help of my husband. And what's so interesting is my very first session with you.
Mm-hmm.
You're starting to do all your stuff, all your touching my arm, my whatever, and let me go to your organs now. And I forget which one it is. I have it recorded, but let's just say it was the liver or something. Like, and you're like, okay, you got a blockage in your liver, and then you start doing all your things.
Hand moding.
You're hand moding, and you're like, okay, it's connected to an emotion. Let's see, shame, guilt, fear, anger. Okay, anger. From, let's see, brother, mother, father. Oh, it's anger with your father. So even after my years and years of therapy talking about my relationship with my dad and all the like anger issues that I have from my dad, it's still stuck in my body. Even though my brain gets it, my body doesn't.
The brain-body connection, well, and know this though, that as you've worked on it, it does process it out, talking it out. So you have made leaps and bounds. It's the that old adage where there can come a time when your body and your brain are disconnected and things can get stuck in the body because of the communication between the body part and the brain. So before like you can get upset with yourself or say, did I not process it out by talking it out? That's being a little too harsh on yourself. When there's a disconnect, what will happen is we have to take into account all the other traumas and all the other stresses that have added on in life. As you recognize it in your brain, you see it's there, it's in an organ, the organ's not functioning and metabolizing like it should. And then you're trying to process it through your brain, you got this new way of thinking. But then you got to take into account if you had stress with Manny or if you had stress with life. And your body, what I call it, the blowing your phone up.
Mm.
What happens is that your neurology gets so much info, it can only process so much if your bandwidth is at a certain level. If you are processing now, as I'm saying, and are later in our lives, we've got a lot of stress that goes on. So as we process more and more, you just taking note of how your dad's relationship was, started the program, de-stress. It'll reveal unto you other programs you have to take out as well. But it is that lifelong journey in the sense that you recognize that it did happen and your body still chemically reacts to the idea of your dad putting you down, right? You trained your body over all those years to release a certain amount of cortisol and adrenaline when your dad was around.
Right.
You didn't mean to. Your body got responsive to it. It's almost like a body reaction without the brain even thinking about it. Your dad walks in, your adrenals go, ooh, that's it. I got to go. It does take time for those memories to come out of even the adrenal glands. So even when you heal the brain, the attachment of the brain to what they call the sympathetic nervous system is that's the part of your nervous system that it gets very excited. So over years, you got overexcited, and it stimulated your adrenals to keep pumping out adrenaline to where that became your normal. Overexcited, overworked, fight or flight all the time. That's your normal now, and you live at that. You start to take recognition of your dad, what he did to you, right? You start to calm it out of that organ, and you're saying, that's good. But there's still a link to your sympathetic nervous system. And so you still have that, but you have all the other stresses. As you eliminate, it's a little bit of a lifelong journey, but you keep recognizing and keep repeating the mantra. It'll go away. I found it because there's maybe small traces of it, but it put a huge impression, a dent in your neurology. It really did. And so it doesn't mean that you didn't forgive him. It doesn't mean you didn't work on it. There's still a body reaction in some fashion there.
I think I could also apply that to my situation with the guy that I dated before that we recently were talking about. Why does he still trigger me? And it's, I'm like, I've talked about him in therapy too, that guy. And if somebody were to bring up his name, I still go, ugh. Or if somebody tries to manipulate me with their words, I think about that guy. And I say, like, I learned my biggest lessons from him. I learned what it was like to be manipulated, what it was like to feel like you could never measure up, you could never be good enough, and all of those things. So I'm like, okay, I'm grateful that I learned those lessons. But why does this person still, if somebody brings him up, it's a trigger? And so, like, we had a situation recently, and he was like, it concerns me that you could still get that worked up about that situation. Like, maybe I need to go back into therapy and work on more stuff. And I'm like, but I did work on it. I don't think about this person at all. It's just if somebody brings him up in this one situation got brought up, I don't want to go into detail about it, but it triggered me, and it triggered a lot of different things. It included another friend of mine, and so then that triggered different things, and so it was one of those where I was like, okay, I did the work. I know I did the work on this situation, but why do I still get triggered?
And I brought it up because it was more perception of the situation. Like, again, like, what I was, and we had like a week long fight over this because I was on the opposite side of her. I thought very differently. I was like, oh, you're just feeling this way because of this. Like, if you step back out of the situation and you really see it for what it is, again, dissect the people in the situation. This person over here, not trying to hurt you. This person is going through their own life. They're dealing with a lot. You're not the forefront of their mind. You have to be able to understand that, appreciate that, and empathize. When you take it that personal, what you are saying is you feel like you should have been a top priority in their life without doing the work to be a top priority in their life. Now, you can demand that from me because we're doing life together every day. You're showing up at home. You're coming back. We're building. We're traveling. We're loving. We're intimate. Every day we're building this thing. So you have that right to have that expectation of me. But a friend that you don't even go see, except every like couple months you make time, like, you should not have that expectation of this person. It's not realistic. It's not healthy. You know, let that person work it out. And I promise you, they'll come to their senses. They just have to work it out on their own. So it was tough trying to get her to understand that these people aren't trying to hurt you, and you don't need to feel this way. Like, you really don't. Like, let people work out their situations, because it's really like rarely about you.
Yeah.
Unless you're talking with the person that's about you, like me. It should always be about you with me. With mm-hmm. other people, their lives will take priority over us.
Yeah.
And that's something I learned with my old group. I'm like, no matter what happens, people are going to choose themselves over me because it's self-preservation, when it goes back to it.
Off the air, I'll fill you in on the rest of the story. Oh, yeah.
when you, I do want us to take into consideration, like whenever a situation would trigger you, not to like give excuses about anything. Like when you say, did I process this out? I thought it was gone. I think that it takes me back to when we talk about how an organ in perception, organs store different types of emotions, they say. And the reason they do this, let's do a little backtrack. I would say like they call it an enteric nervous system. So your brain may process out. I talked it out in my brain. But like, let's say your heart develops before your brain. And they say like your heart and your digestive system all have their own nervous system within mm-hmm. them. If somebody is in your life and they really hurt you, then they keep imprinting that pain and that trauma on you. Your brain can perceive it, but a lot of times the organ can feel that stress that they put on. And that's why triggers can stay around when you've already processed it through your brain, the enteric nervous system. So let's say my heart feels a vibration from Manny or something. He says something to me over the years. And that's why they say that the heart, through research, the heart feels before the brain will perceive it. Mm. So your heart has its own nervous system connected to your adrenal glands, and it can initiate a nervous system or an anxiety attack or something without your brain actually having to receive the info. Mm. So you think, I did the work. You did. It's just that type of trauma was stored in certain organs that trigger your adrenal glands. Mm-hmm. And when you have that impression all through certain periods of time, yes, that trauma changes your perception, your belief changes. And just you trying to sit down and visualize, I do this, I ask my patients whenever, what do I need to do? What am I doing wrong? I will have a patient sit down and just close their eyes like they're meditating. And you hear how southern that was?
Meditating.
And then when I say, think of that person, and I say, find the area of your body where it goes. Feel where the nervous system impression goes. And a lot of times you'll feel it in the heart. And it has a lot to do with your 9 personality. And I'll say why. If you feel that, I say, don't be afraid to allow that energy to flow right there, because it's going to pull up a lot of memory. It hurts. Like, you'll feel it physically hurt because it's going to start making you feel anxious. But you got to let it flow and work through it. Like, you literally got to let it sit and mull. So don't try to do anything with it. Let the nervous system and energy go right to this area. And I think it would be hard for you, like, you being a 9, is because you consider the interrelationship of everybody involved, like this person did this or this person, whereas his personality is like they perceived it a whole different way than you did. You know, that because I say it as me, that's how I am. I perceive, like, if Manny looked at my life, he's like, Motley, you are doing it wrong. I'm surely like, because I'll sit there and I will try to process old emotions, and I go, this person hurt me this way and this person, and I think of all the interrelationships. I'm like, no, this is how you perceive reality. You yourself. Like,
right.
And then when I start taking responsibility, that's how I feel for my thoughts, and allow the chi to go to the area, it has changed my thoughts about other people. I'm like, they are acting out of their perception of reality. And then this is what I tell myself, you're trying to take responsibility how they perceive reality. Mm-hmm. You cannot do that. Mm-hmm. I was like, you don't have the battery power.
Right.
I was like, I'm asking Jesus to carry me. Mm. You know, exactly. I can't carry. Like, it's hard for me to carry. Right. And the only people you really need to carry is your husband and wife. So hopefully that didn't go too far. But
no, that's great. That's why I'm like, I don't reserve any energy for people outside of like my inner circle and people that I genuinely care about, that I'm willing to reserve some battery power for them. Like, I want to be
so envious that you can do that. I mean, I try my best, guys. I really don't you like
I'm almost 40 years old though. This took a lot of like a lot, and you know what, a lot of it had to be honest with myself, because I stored a lot when I used to think the world revolved around me. Like, people needed to keep me important in their life, or keep me in the forefront of their mind. Like, I would go on tour and I would come back and I would be offended that people didn't make time to hang out with me, or I'd be offended over this or over that. And I'm like, bruh, the world don't revolve around you. These people have real lives that they're going through, that they're experiencing, that you know nothing about. Yes. So if you don't at least open up your heart to have empathy and understand that, hey man, maybe what they're going through is more important than you are, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. Then you're always going to hold a grudge. So now I kind of just walk through life like, people will show me who they are. They'll show me if I'm important to them. And if they do, then those are people that I'm going to spend time on and energy on. And I have a small group, because that's all I can take. So it's easy for me to let go. It's easy for me to process in this manner because of, like you said, I've thought it enough times. Like I've continually just told myself, this is how I'm going to think. This is how I'm going to think. This is how I'm going to think. Yes. Because I thought the other way and it didn't get me anywhere except for bitter, angry, hurt, and a lot of like bubbly volcanic stuff underneath. You know what I'm saying? So
exactly.
It just takes 800,000 times, babe. I will be there to count every time.
I bet you will.
Like a step counter, like when you do exercise.
Uh-huh. I love this.
It's the journey, guys. It's like a complete journey with these this process. And I will say that whenever you ever read the book The Four Agreements,
mm-mm.
Well, basically, I love it. It says that you always tell the truth and do your best. You don't try to do anything that would harm somebody intentionally. And when you don't take things personally. Those are four agreements that you make with yourself.
Mm.
So when I go into being a natural like peacemaker, I will try to get everybody together to do something. And when somebody doesn't say something back to me, I'm like, goodness gracious, did I not put out enough? I was like, you're taking it personally.
Yeah.
So did they lie to you? Did they do something that was harmful to you? I said, if they didn't produce those, they're not responsible for the way I feel.
Right.
I have no right to expect you to feel the way I want you to. But if they break one of those rules, I'm like, and there may be some restitution that needs to be had. But it's helped me a lot. Yeah, that those four good. Things.
And I got to put that book in the list.
Yeah, it's same. Good. It's a short read, but I read
it's
it.
Called The Four Agreements.
And it's literally, it's this. It's a great book because it says, what is the agreement you made to yourself?
Mm.
You keep yourself in a way from getting hurt. I'm like, nope, I didn't lie to that person. I didn't do this. And they want me to expect me to act a certain way towards them. No, I didn't break the four agreements. And so if I somehow lied to myself, they'll probably tell me. But I love that book, so. It's a good one.
Dude, thank you so much for taking time.
Man, yes. you guys are rock stars. So I'm so glad.
I am so excited that we got a scientific therapy marriage counseling session.
Well, here's why I didn't mind going into that realm. A, because I know our fan base and what they deal with. One of the questions that they ask the most is like relationship questions.
Yeah.
And then everything you're talking about, I know just based on a little bit of research that I do, that a lot of sickness, a lot of things that are happening in our bodies come from emotional trauma. Mm-hmm. And most of the emotional trauma comes from relationships.
Yeah, it's all, yeah.
So it's important to tie his science yes. to what I know our fan base is dealing with
yeah.
and even that we deal with. So we can do a whole nother yeah. one too, which I'm excited about. But I'm gracious. We're already
thank
like
you.
An hour and a half.
Oh, okay.
But it went by so fast. Guys. I'm like, I love this.
Thank you, Dr. Motley. You're amazing. Oh. You're a gem.
I'm gonna put your Instagram, all your information on how people can get a hold of you and study more of what you're talking about. His Instagram is real fascinating. A lot of freaking like gems and nuggets that he has.
What
on
is
there.
It, really quick? Tell us.
Dr. Motley at Dr. Motley. It's all spelled out. DOCTOR Motley. And I really want to say thank you guys. I really enjoy you guys, and you guys are great. And I just feel cooler when I hang out with you guys. They're out from California, and I'm here in Franklin, Tennessee. And it's super cool.
Franklin's the LA of Tennessee.
That's right. That's
is
right.
It? Is it really? I don't know.
East Nashville would be.
East Nashville, yeah.
Franklin's the Brentwood.
That's right. Yeah.
Even though Brentwood could be the Brentwood, too.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you guys so much.
Love you, bro.
Love you.
Everybody who's listening, thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
We appreciate you. Make sure to subscribe, like our channel if you're watching this on YouTube. But if you're on iTunes or Spotify, follow us, subscribe, write a review. We appreciate you guys. Love you so much. We out.
When you're by my side, will all time stand still? When you hold my hand, I can tell that it's real. Here we are right here right now, and I really want to feel your touch. This is us right here right now, boom. No, this ain't no virtual love. Yeah, welcome back to the real life. Warm nights and the love is in the air, feeling so right. We're not celebrities, but man, we feel the spotlight. Moon shining on your face, smile so bright. All across the world, we stand beneath this big sky. Mothers, fathers holding their babies so tight. If we could see beyond the screens, we could see that life is more than going viral. We can make it what we like. And I don't need a repost to make me feel nice. I just need to touch your heart to get a real like. Where's the truth in the world that's full of good lies? It's the beauty that I see when I look in your eyes. Be by my side, will all time stand still? Will hold my hand, well I can tell that it's real. Here we are, right here, right.
chance. Do I love you more enough to give you romance? Put my phone down, ask you if you wanna dance. And I can't help but compliment you when I take a glance. And I love how you don't post it all to gain some fans. The only one you wanna double tap is your man. I ain't a criminal, but can I steal your time and plan? A getaway where we can travel to a distant land. Truth is sexier than fiction, so I keep it real. And I'm not virtually in love with you, I'm sun sealed. And deliver no wonder Stevie could write them songs. The type of love that makes the world wanna sing along. Long time stand still. We'll hold my hand when I hold it. Well, I can tell that it's real. Yeah. Here we are, right here, right now. And I really wanna feel your touch. This is us, right here, right now.
Ha ha ha.